Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Everything Horror Podcast. I am Tessa Baker, and I am joined by my handsome other half.
I am Paul Dolsky. Thank you. I rate myself a 1 out of 10. Thank you.
Shut up now. Anyways, we're joined by the awesome Estella Labello.
Oh, I was like, that could be both of us. This is your girl, Cristela Labello, the Mistress of Darkness, Mommy Milker Supreme.
That's a little bit of an introduction. And then we are joined by the awesomely...
How can I top that one? I can't top it. Well, this is Ken R2's joining in on the conversation.
And tonight, ladies and gents, we are going to talk about Resident Evil Infinite Darkness. So let's jump into this. This was done in 2021. It ran for 26 minutes. It was a TV series, and the story synopsis for this is a federal agent, Leon S. Kennedy, teams up with the Terra Save staff member Claire Redfield to investigate a zombie outbreak based on the popular video game series of the same name by Capcom.
And I just want to say real quick, because I think Tessa forgot to mention that 26 minutes per episode, because this is released on Netflix and it's not just a one full movie, and it's 4 episodes split up into 26 minutes, which basically adds up to almost 2 hours of content, which I thought was different than what we have seen previously with CGI films like Degeneration, Damnation, and Vendetta. And but this is a brand new take of Netflix. So this is, I thought, was pretty good.
Well, I would have to say, why can't Hollywood do something this good? Right? It's a series. If a 2-hour movie, this would be even better. But I prefer the little bite-sized chunks of action, horror. There was a lot of suspense. It was a 25% spy movie, 25% action movie, 25%. It had everything. And it's CGI. You couldn't ask for anything. I'm just waiting for season 2.
I liked it, to say, like, when I first, we were talking about doing the podcast, I sit down to watch something, okay, it's going to be one big film. I didn't realize it was going to be a TV, like, TV series kind of thing. But, like Ken said, I enjoyed it, like, the little bite-sized, like, 20-minute episodes. It kept you wanting to come back for more. And I wish someone had the big enough budget to do it like this in real life, because every Resident Evil CGI movie has been just kiss perfect. I just don't understand why they can't bring that to real life Hollywood. That's just wishful thinking on my part, though.
We loved it. I mean, like, I kind of mentioned on the Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City that I would prefer watching this type of stuff over live action. That's right, good girl. And I apologize for anybody listening if they hear our daughter. She's having a teething moment, and I apologize in advance, so I will mute myself any chance I get. Anyway, to continue on, I would rather watch anything CGI over this, just because they know the character. They know how everybody's supposed to be, and it's not like the bitch-ass Leon S. Kennedy from Welcome to Raccoon City that does not know how to hold a gun until the very end when he grows some balls. Anyway, this is the smart-ass Leon that I know of from the game, everything. I've always enjoyed these, and as Crystal was mentioning, I actually enjoyed the bite size. I didn't think I would at first, but I actually did, in fact, enjoy it. The only thing that I think they could have done without is the previously on type of stuff, but other than that, it's not that bad. And for 26 minutes each, you know, it was enough to satisfy the viewer. And I'll just throw it out there right now. I would honestly give this film a 8 out of 10. And I'm going to say film just because it is sort of like a film. But more to say this episodic series, I guess, an 8 out of 10 just because I almost feel like there should have been a little bit more to the story, maybe one or two more episodes. And I think that would have just helped fill the gap a little bit more. It did feel kind of rushed a little bit with the story. But anyway, Tessa, what were your thoughts on Infinite Darkness?
I actually enjoyed it. And we were talking about this earlier when we were talking about Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. If we could actually take CGI Leon and just stick him in the live action films, he would be a perfect Leon. Because he really is. The guy who voice acts for Leon in this film sounds like Leon. Like, right down to the attitude, the smart-ass remarks, the whole demeanor, spot on. I thought it was well done. I liked it. I usually don't have complaints with the CGI Resident Evil films. I tend to like those better than the live-action ones because they actually stick to the story of the characters and who they're supposed to be versus going off the grid. So, how about you, Crystal?
Oh, I liked it. I was saying earlier, like, I enjoyed the bite size.
Yeah, the bite size.
Yeah, even though I thought it was going to be like the other ones and just be a whole film. I mean, a part of me kind of wanted to be just a whole film, but I think it's easier to digest it being in episodes. So you're not trying to remember everything at once. And I mean, I watched 2 episodes and then I watched 2 more episodes because I thought it was going to be longer than that. So, I mean, I thought it was good. I liked it. I liked how they portrayed Leon, of course, because Leon was Leon. Claire, I mean, they were the characters that you know and love in these games. And so, I mean, for me, it's a solid 8. It's a solid 8 movie episodic Resident Evil thing.
Yeah, I will agree that it is a solid 8 out of 10. If they could just take the characters that are portrayed in the CGI and stick them in the live-action films, I think they'd have a hit.
We'll jump into this. So, as a story as a whole, so basically we got Leon S. Kennedy again, and I liked how, basically, for those trying to figure this out, this is after the events of Resident Evil 4, where Leon saved the president's daughter and has brought her back. So you can imagine the connection between the president and what Leon has together because of that what's bond. Going down. Yeah, the bond is very strong here, and we'll probably get into that. So if you have not seen this series, please stop listening. Because I'm unfortunately going to say we're probably going to go into definitely spoiler territory because it's just, we have to because it's just part of the story. But anyway, the fact that we're looking at almost like a Black Hawk Down situation, if I may say, where one team went to try to go help the other team, but instead get caught into the crossfire of something much more mysterious going on. Which lead to the whole team committing suicide, which we will get into that. But as a whole, we got a lot of events going on. We got a zombie outbreak inside of the White House. And it leads into the objective of trying to find the truth, as one of the main guys say, too, a part of the... I think it was the Bravo team. If not, it was the Alpha team, per se. But I like the aspect of... I definitely got the chills of almost like a Black Hawk Down moment. And I don't know if anybody caught on to that. The bond was there. Everything was just really spot on. And like we're probably going to mention. So, I guess, Ken, let's start with you. As a whole, with the story, how did you approach the story?
Yes, I did get that military theme to the film. That's how it was. 25% of everything across the board. You had spy, you had military action, you had horror. I did enjoy that sequence in the beginning where these soldiers were deployed to some place in the Middle East and all everything went to shit. Very realistic. Once again, why can't Hollywood do this? They did it with Black Hawk Down, as you had mentioned. That's a perfect comparison. Why can't they do a Resident Evil like this live action? But anyway, that opening sequence right there and all the events that were interconnected with that, oh, come on. That was good. That was great writing.
Story was pretty good. I mean, I could have dealt with a little bit more gore, you know? I could have had more gore into it and I'd have been okay with it. But there are some scenes, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, which happens in the second episode, that just, I was like, that was probably my favorite part of the whole fucking episodes. But for a whole story, I agree. It had that very Black Hawk Down espionage, I guess, kind of thing going on. So the whole story together was very well done, very well put, very believable. And it almost, in a way, due to like the military thing being like shot down the Middle East or whatever, it kind of brought to mind, like, could this been possibly? I don't think, I know it's not, but in my mind's like, this almost, the very beginning part almost kind of reminds me of Resident Evil 5, where they're in Africa. And I was like, okay. Is this going to somehow connect to 5 since this is right after 4 and then 5's not too far behind that? So I was like, could this be something to do with 5? But I know it does. I know it doesn't, but yeah, I liked the whole story. Is pretty good. I enjoyed it. It could have been a little longer. Like you said, I think they could have added a little few more pieces to it, but all in all, I liked it. It was a good show or film, show film.
Basically, the way I took it is, like, I think Netflix is only did 4 episodes, and they kind of tied it really short, I will say, is they wanted to test the audience, right? This is like a test. So I'm wondering now, with hopefully the outcome of how well it did, because this is just for people who like to go out and buy physical media. So I honestly went out and bought this on Blu-ray because it's only $18. I mean, it's $17.99, but the way I look at it, like I said, I love the CGI. I feel it's just, you know, spot on, perfect. And it fits well with, like, Degeneration, Damnation, Vendetta. I almost feel like this is actually continuing that particular timeline, and it fits right in. And it's like, once again, we're kind of getting these Easter eggs of the storyline and the timeline to know when exactly this is actually going on, which we obviously know is past Resident Evil 4, and as Crystal was saying, Resident Evil 5. So what is, which would make perfect sense, Crystal, because what is Chris doing right now? You know, like, we don't really hear much. We didn't even hear a mention about Chris Redfield, and it would have been nice to have been like, yeah, we dispatched Chris to Africa because of etc. etc., right? And that would help tie in that whole aspect of when what's his face was trying to basically pressure the president into starting the war, and starting the war with China, I think it was, because they were trying to blame, I might be skipping ahead too much here, but just to prove the point here, but when the shit went down inside the submarine, right, that's where they basically were around Russian, Chinese waters. They didn't actually detect anything at first, but then since you know, they lost contact with the submarine. Now they're saying, oh, something like the Chinese did this. And like, even though that's what one of the main guys were trying to do, he wanted that war to start, basically. And I'm trying to find that guy's name, Jason, that's the guy. How did he put it? First there's terror, first there's fear, then there's terror, and then it spreads, basically. So he wanted the truth out there, which was basically blackmailing the United States of what was going on underneath the White House, I think it was, and et cetera, et cetera. So, honestly, I think some of the cool part, too, was in the submarine. Like, the weird-ass... how do I want to even word this? Like, the rats, right? Like, especially that one dude that ended up looking like he was puking up all these rats that were coming out of him. It's like, what the
hell? That's my favorite scene out of the whole episodes. That's my favorite scene.
Exactly. The way Leon reacts to that is exactly why you got to appreciate Leon in this type of series and in the video game series as well, because of just, he's just like, ah, really? like, come on. And like, he basically just to put it out there, he zapped all these rats, right? He like basically makes it so that he busted the pipe, the water gets filled, and then he uses the axe to spark the electricity, which zaps all the rats. But that whole entire scene is just amazing. And that is how basically they take over the submarine to cause it to blow up. They escape, yada, yada, yada.
I know Jason gets the... Does he transform? I know he kills the girl, his co-worker, or his the little Asian lady, I forgot her name. Because he's trying this whole time to show that He wants to be injected with the chemical, like, or the weapon, to show the world what's going on, what the White House and all them are doing, being corrupt. And I know Leon and all them, of course, stop it. And they get away. I did not like the fact, I know Leon, the president, have this bond, but I did not like that Leon didn't want to bring it to light. I did not like that. Like, I know Leon's a good guy and he did save the president's daughter. But the fact of him being like, no, I got the bomb, this president. If they find out, it will ruin it. I'm like, nah, no, no. Let it be known who in the White House is doing this. Yeah, it's not the president, but let it be known who's doing this. Because I don't want to spoil it, because I'm sure y'all want to talk about that part. But, spoiler, it is one of the people in the close to the president that's doing this shit. And, that's most of the part I remember the most, like, most, that's the most freshest part for me. The story was okay at the end. I didn't like Leon's decision. I think, you know, he shouldn't have been like, no, I don't want to do that or whatever because the president, but I get where he's coming from, I guess.
Shin Mei, by the way.
Yeah, Shin Mei. I do feel bad for the military dude, the Jason guy, because his heart was in the right direction. Just what he chose to do was the wrong choice. Like, I don't think being ejected or using that on himself to prove a point was the right idea, but I mean,
right? I mean, I think I know where you're going with this. Like, well, we gotta feel bad for Jason, right? Because look at what happened to his squad. I think he did that in a way because he felt responsible, even though he didn't outright say that. But look back at what he did, right? He went to one of his comrades' places only to find that the guy committed suicide with a shotgun to basically the jaw because he had no head. And he, you know, he brought I forget how they worded it. I'll just say antidote, so that it would help stop the process of all of them turning. And spoiler, this is why his squad was committing suicide, which Claire was trying to figure out why the entire squad was committing suicide. And she was, you know, trying to get answers from the president's right hand, I'll say, and stuff like that. But nobody wanted to really say it. So instead, she investigated it, figured it out, went to the same exact comrade's house just to see it herself. And she stepped on the, like I said, the antidote to realize Jason was here and he definitely knows what's going on. Ken, we haven't heard from you. So what did you think of this whole like plot line here that Crystal was mentioning?
Yeah, the chain of events, how it all played out, has the espionage feel to it. Once midway through the series, you get a feel of who's the bad guy and what the intentions are. I wouldn't say it's cliche, because in a way that is very well written, that you know what to expect, but it's not so obvious. Once again, just like how the villain from Raccoon City, the Resident Evil reboot, we have a villain who has good intentions, but it just goes terribly wrong. Here, definitely, you could feel for this guy's decision. Did he got what was coming to him? Of course. And the storyline very, very, very much expands on the whole Resident Evil mythos from beginning to end. It's just, I haven't seen that one CGI film from Resident Evil that is terrible. But this one really stood out for me, and not to digress from the storyline, is the graphics. The graphics is like Lord of the Rings type of quality. This is, wow. High tech right here.
All right, fair enough. So Tessa, as you just walked in, so what do you feel about Jason, responsibility of what happened to his squad? And as Krista was putting it out, as she didn't like the fact that Leon wasn't wanting to expose the truth like Jason and Shinmei wanted.
Well, I understand Jason's perspective on the whole thing, because he wants to get revenge for his squad because they all essentially committed suicide because of what happened with the
Shinmei's brother, right?
Well, not just Shinmei's brother, but the fact that they all got roped into being lackeys for the Secretary of Defense or whatever the hell his name is. They were essentially made into his puppets, and Jason hated that they were pretty much controlled by this guy, because he supplied them with what they needed to stay as they were and not become something else. And then Jason finally got to a point where he just snapped and was like, well, fuck this. I've had enough. I want this out in the open. I want everybody to see everything for what it really is and not hide the truth anymore. So I understand Jason's perspective on this. As far as Leon not exposing the truth, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that he withheld the information to like oust those responsible. But I get it because of the bond with the president, but at the same time, it doesn't make it right.
You're supposed to be the good guy of these stories.
You're supposed to be the good guy of the story. Exactly. You're not supposed to side with the enemy or whatever, bond or no bond. But at the same time, like I said, it doesn't make it right. But I understand the bond between Leon and the president because of Leon saving the president's daughter.
But we can touch into that by saying, well, do you think he would do that just because he was trying to protect the fact that of the
he
bond?
He was trying not to spread fear, like Jason kept saying to him. Jason was iterating to him, it's all about fear. He wanted that fear to grow, and Leon didn't want there to be fear. He didn't want that to happen.
Right, but don't you feel that, though, if Leon was part of the explosion, though, do you think that...
Dude, I think that would hurt his relationship with the president.
Right, because, well, let me finish. Like, with the fact of not only hurting the bond with the president, and then Crystal can touch on what she wanted to say, but I just wanted to throw it out there. But let's put it this way. Let's say that the truth was exposed, right? Okay? And then Leon called the other guy that basically told him, tell the president that Leon, said, look, this is not the Chinese fault. And look what happened. The president, you know, heard that from the guy, which I'm brain farting on his name right now. But anyway, I think it was maybe Graham. I forget.
Yeah, it was Graham.
Yeah, and... Let's put this back to what I was saying. Let's say the truth is out there. So if Graham would have told the president that the Chinese were not involved in this, right? Well, do you think after Graham said and the president said, where did you hear this from?
And
Graham
said,
Leon.
He wasn't going to believe anybody else if it wasn't Leon. Yeah, I get that.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, do you think like that still would have, like, do you believe that the president would have done what he had done if the truth was already out there? Or do you think he would have been like, no, we unfold shit because he helped,
no,
you know?
No, I think because of the bond that he has with the president would take Leon's word over anybody else's. And he would believe that whatever, if Leon decided to out with it, that he would feel that it was for the best interest of the people. But... Whether or not the fact remains here is that Leon chose not to expose the truth. He may have not have hurt his relationship with the president, but he did hurt his relationship between him and Claire. You saw that bond that they had just fracturing because Leon made that choice. You saw that look of what the fuck in Claire's eyes when Leon says, I can't do that. I can't do this.
Oh, I thought you were calling me so we could go have dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. So whether he chose to do it or not, there's a bond, like either way, a bond is going to fracture, whether it's Leon's bond with the president or Leon's bond with Claire. You know.
I did not like that choice. I kind of lost some respect from Leon in that film. I really did.
I like Claire too. I like Claire Redfield. I like her character and everything. I've followed her story ever since I've played the Resident Evil games and everything. So I just could see the utter look of betrayal and what the fuck in her eyes when Leon made that decision to not go public with the information that he had. It was enough to take down the bad guys, even though it could have possibly had the chance of making the relationship with the president a little shaky. But at the same time, if the president has that much faith in Leon, I think he would have stuck it out with Leon with whatever decision that he would have made, and he would have had his back regardless because of what Leon has done for the president by saving his daughter. I think that bond would have been strong enough to even handle Leon putting everything out on the table. That's almost, how I feel.
It almost makes me wonder if the president even know what the hell is even going on.
I don't know. He didn't. He didn't.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, he did.
Because it was the Secretary of Defense, wasn't it? That he was the bad guy.
He was the bad guy. He was working with Tricell.
Yep.
So I mean, I think, in all honesty, like I said, I mean, because Leon didn't want to expose the truth because of his bomb the president. Okay. And Jason's point, I'm wanting to show fear. Yeah, the whole fear thing is not right. Both sides, like I said, you know, they have their reasons for what they did. I don't agree with either side. But, okay, hypothetically speaking, Leon didn't say anything. Okay. He didn't expose it. So what happens with the Secretary of Defense? What happens with all the pathogen of what he's doing? Even if Leon doesn't tell the president, you know, okay, that's still going to spread. That's giving the Secretary of Defense guy his, Lord forgive me for saying this, because this shit that's going on now in the world is not good and I hate it, but it's like Vladimir Putin. All right, I can get away with this. What else can I get away with?
It's still giving him an upper hand because he's not being ousted. And even now with the Secretary of Defense, he was even he was even bitten by Jason. And now he has to depend on the Tricell injections to keep himself normal and not become the monster he already is on the inside.
He's going to be the monster that he is all the way around.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, and I also feel like, and I give them respect for this, they play a lot into the military with PTSD and all that, with all the his squad committing suicide. So they really hit that home with the, you know, we did some terrible things, we were lied to, we were misled, this happened, it's on us. And that's a real thing. PTS is a very real and serious thing, and they really portrayed that with these soldiers from this squad, his friends, that just couldn't handle it anymore. Yeah, and Jason was the last one. You know, yeah. And Jason is the last one standing, and he's like, I have to do something. It's all on me now. And like I said, this one, even though Jason wasn't the main bad guy, he was an antagonist in the film or show, you felt for him. Just like what Birkin and Welcome to Raccoon said, you felt for him. You kind of really wanted that bad guy to kind of, almost in a way, win.
Because he was done so dirty. Him and his squad were done dirty. And he was just trying to get retribution for him and his squad because of what they were put through. They were made into puppets and made to do horrible, horrible things because the Secretary of Defense, pardon my saying, had them by the balls.
Pretty much. And I feel so bad because I'm like, I guess, and then when Leon was like, I can't expose the truth because of the president. No. If you want to be the good guy that you're supposed to be and have respect for that man for everything he did, even though what he was doing was wrong, or good intentions, wrong way.
You know what I like about this whole conversation? Is the fact that we did not dive so deep into Raccoon City as we dive. We dissected it. I'm listening to you guys like, wow, this is deep. Everybody's like into the story. Meanwhile, the other episode, we like, this and that, and we just threw everything in the kitchen.
All agree that the CGI is better than the live
action. The CGI is hands down better than the live action. I have never, ever been disappointed with a CGI Resident Evil film.
The whole story was good.
Exactly, Crystal. Exactly. And yes, Ken, isn't it amazing what one specific thing can do with all of us?
Yeah, we could take one topic such as Resident Evil, talk about it in two different ways, and have completely different points of view on it. One we can barely skim the surface of and not give a shit about, and the other thing we can dive deep in, fully immerse ourselves in it, and really just get into it. It's really all about how good the story is.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. When you write a script, if it's CGI or if it's live action, it's the same movie script. What's going on with Hollywood that is just fails in live action? Here we have CGI, the same product, and this is fantastic. It's mind-boggling. You know, it was even more mind-boggling. Why hasn't, this is a different topic altogether. we need more CGI movies like this instead of these Pixar films, because there's such a high demand. We want, this is the future of movie viewing as it is right now. And all we see is Pixar stuff. We need more of this.
No more Michael Bay explosions? Are you kidding me? I live for Michael Bay explosions.
Except Michael Bay. There you go.
I hate Michael Bay, but his explosions are spot on. He's got some good explosion scenes. I will give him that.
Yeah, real quick, actually. You know, I was trying to look this up while we were actually trying to do the Raccoon City episode. Does anybody even know what the budget was? At all, because usually IMDb has it, and lately it had not been shown the budget, which is very
strange. Which one for the live action?
For the live action and this CGI one.
All right, let's search online while we continue this convo.
Welcome to Raccoon City had a $25 million. I'm thinking this is the budget, $25 million budget. Let's see, the reason is really the lack of budget. Studios usually pour millions of dollars in the production. Welcome to Raccoon City costs $25 million, which is not a lot of money for a recognized intellectual property. That $25 million went into the set designs. I guarantee you. And maybe the CGI, but
obviously,
set designs probably cost them the most. Yeah, because the Mia Jovovich films. $32 million, $200 million, $40 million. So yeah, Welcome to Raccoon City had a lower budget compared to the shitty Jovovich films,
which they made her into like a psychic, like telekinetic
clone,
freaking experiment.
That was the Alice theory.
They made her into this like freaking superhuman.
You know,
which there's only supposed to be like one technical superhuman in this franchise, and that's supposed to be Albert Wesker's character. Am I right? He's the only one that's supposed to be superhuman.
I will say though, the dude that played in The Mummy was in one of them films, and he was hot as ever. I will say that that's probably the highlight of whatever film he was in the Mia Jovovich. But the guy that like leads like the little like renegades in the Mummy films.
Mm-hmm.
They got the black wavy hair. He's hot as hell.
He played Carlos Oliveira. Oliveira.
Is that who he played? He played Carlos?
He played Oliveira. Yeah.
You know, I wasn't paying attention to his name. I was just paying attention to him. I did not realize he was Carlos. But yeah, he was the best part of any of them films because he's just hot. He's a hot little man.
He's easy on the eyes. Yes, I will admit. I will agree. He's a damn good actor too. And it just broke your damn heart when he got fucking bit.
Yeah, I was sad about that.
I was like, God damn it! But the way he chose to go out,
right? He did. He was like, you know what? I'm gonna go down fucking fighting. Give him props.
I'm gonna go down fighting and smoking a doobie.
Hey,
all the way to the end.
The only way to go. If I want to get killed and ate or whatever, I'm going to at least be high as a kite as I go. Pass me some of them Scooby snacks. Let me have a few gummy Scooby snacks and let's rock and roll. Kids, please don't do drugs. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad for you. Don't do those.
You had to put a disclaimer.
Yep, drugs are bad.
Yep, that's a disclaimer. We are not responsible for anybody doing anything out of this episode.
Yeah.
We hold no responsibility. Anyway, to touch on another thing about when we were talking about the budget or whatever, I find it interesting that, and I just looked it up for Walmart.com anyway, because obviously, you know, they're good at new releases, and this is basically the only store around our area that we can actually buy fucking movies at. Anyway, so the point of this is Resident Evil Infinite Darkness is, like I stated, on Blu-ray. $17.99. Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City is a $19.99. $2 difference, but why is a CGI $2 less than a live action? I don't know.
The actors. That's all it is. Because you have actors. The actors.
I'm sorry, but the CGI actors voice actors were much better than the live action actors.
Because they know the Japanese are. Yeah, Japanese know what the hell they're doing. They know who to pick. That's the problem.
Wait, are you telling me you didn't like the actor for Albert Wesker?
For Raccoon City?
Welcome
City? Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's good. Yeah, he's good.
What are you talking about? Are we smoking doobie gold right now?
I'm sorry, but the flannel shirt and dungarees, Albert Wesker, does nothing for me.
My eyes. What have you done to my eyes? I can't see.
Total freaking mood killer. Cry, total buzzkill. Just no. Nope. I wanted to turn it off right then and there when I saw him in a flannel and a pair of jeans. I'm like, no.
Yeah. I'm telling you, he came from Tractor Supply Co. I guarantee it.
Well, he needs to go back. Refund. Right.
we have derailed. We have derailed so bad.
We have definitely derailed. All right, let's get back on track. Well, I thought it was interesting watching Jason's transformation throughout the film. From soldier aspect to, what is he, like espionage agent or whatever? Or double agent. And then ultimately the tyrant aspect? Was that kind of like a tyrant transformation, you guys?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. We could. Was that the... No, that wasn't a tyrant.
That was that's kind of like a tyrant transformation in a way.
Yeah, it was like something.
Almost like an Uber tyrant in a way.
Honestly, right. I guess
because they had him in the tubes. Like, every tyrant, most of the time you see him, they're in those tube containers. So, yeah, I guess so. I guess you could say that.
I almost had the flashback of the first CGI film, Degeneration, where the very end is almost similar. We get this weird, as Tess is going to put it, tyrant. And I want to say it was William Birkin again in Degeneration as well, where... We kind of get the same aspect. William Birkin kind of wanted to show the world again, but I don't know if he was really out there as much as Jason to want to expose the truth, but he definitely wanted to be out there to show the world his new form or something like that.
The true meaning of fear.
Right, Jason. That was Jason, but yeah, I'm talking more. I think it was William Birkin in the first film. I have to go back and rewatch that. But I mean, I'll say it again. The CGIs are just so good. Like Tessa had said, I've never had a problem. She'd never had a problem. I've never had a problem. Honestly, I think the only complaint I really have is sort of the ending. Why? Because it's almost like I've seen it before with Degeneration, and that's about it. Otherwise, Damnation, I believe, had more of the tyrant liquor showdown, which was very interesting. If I remember right, that was Damnation. And I honestly had to rewatch Vendetta again because I can't remember Vendetta that well, even though I have watched it, but it's definitely been a hot minute since I've seen Vendetta. But that would be my only complaint, is the way they're ending the CGI. I mean, I wish it was just a little bit more different than something that makes me go, oh, didn't we already see this in a previous CGI film?
I do like Jason's transformation at the end, though, what he becomes. I like the design for him, like the mutation design, how his you can see his heart beating.
Yep. Out of his chest.
You could see it exposed, and the coloration's really good.
Maybe not a term, but we could basically say, not to cut you off, babe, but we could almost say Jason were technically supposed to be a super soldier. Could look it around the lab.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He is like a super soldier version of a tyrant in a way.
Well, don't forget, that's why the Secondary of Defense, as Crystal was pointing out, is also trying to start a war with China, because he wants to take all those super soldiers that he had it down in the lab before Jason put them all in the acid. He wanted to unleash them.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I mean,
because the Secretary of Defense is all about power. He wants power. He wants control. He wants more, 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 more.
It's right, the government.
He's power hungry.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what basically every espion spy TV series or movie touches on. So here it's just they just added zombies and creatures, and the grand finale with the creature, I think that has been standard in every Marvel, every Resident Evil CGI film, is you have that grand finale with this big giant creature or this big battle scene for the final 30 minutes. But it played out well in this one.
I felt bad for Shenmue.
I felt bad for Shenmue
because I like Shenmue.
She didn't deserve her death. She really didn't.
She was doing everything for the right reasons.
Yeah.
She really was. And she was done dirty in the end, like big time. And to have Jason just take her out and wipe her off the face of the earth like that.
She was getting in his way.
But still, at the same time, she was like, I know it's kind of corny or whatever, but call it what it is. But she was pretty much trying to do like the Beauty and the Beast, like reversal thing, trying to get through to him. And
it looked
like she was starting to, but then that beast within Jason just overtook any humanity he had left, and he just went.
I will say, like, I know you said you liked his design. It's okay, but he reminds me of the tree ants, or like the, if you played Skyrim,
yes,
the little tree people that, okay, you know, the ants, the fire ants that shoot fire and shit at you.
Yeah.
Or that's what he reminds me of, like a mutated ant from Skyrim.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I do give it to him though, because almost like William Birkin, he still had some humanity left him, because he's like, I'm finishing this. He still had some humanity until it finally just completely just like dissolved. Like the best way I can put it is he was trying to fight to the bitter end. Even when he transformed, he tried to fight it to the bitter end and do what he set out to do. And that makes it even more heartbreaking for me, because I'm like, even being transformed into this fucking creature, you're still trying to do right for your people, your friends and your squad, and now you're this big monster that is just, you know, that's it. That's the end of him. Just this big monster. And I'm like, I feel bad for him.
Man, could that be a metaphor of his inner demons? Him
coming out? Yeah.
Yeah. It could be a metaphor that way. Yeah.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. His inner demons overtaking him and coming to the surface. Yeah, definitely.
And his heart being exposed is his actions where he wore his heart on his sleeve, pretty much. All his actions were pretty much feeling based. Yeah, feeling based.
And can we all agree to disagree that he should have done far worse to the Secretary of Defense than what he actually did to him?
All he did was bite him on the fucking neck.
He should have just crushed his skull and called it a day.
He wanted him
to suffer as much as Jason and his squad has suffered.
If that dude could have got away, and then you've got a whole other can of worms. Well, he did get away.
That's why he ended up teaming up with Tricell. Because now he's got to take
the Tricell now.
Well, yeah, okay, you're right. Because now he
understands what Jason and his squad basically committed suicide over, because they just couldn't take it anymore. Because that's basically the rest of their lives, was they had to take that, what I called antidote, so that they didn't bring out, as Tessa said, the demons inside.
Yeah, so now he's dependent on something that he made his lackeys dependent on.
Yeah.
And now he has to deal with the dependency of depending on something that
he created.
That he was a part of.
Yeah, I get that. And I'm all about karma. But
that's what I thought was going on. I thought he was definitely just giving them back the karma that he brought on to everybody.
But I still think he should have killed him. I think she just ripped him apart and killed him. And that's your karma.
And threw him into the acid and call it a day.
The monster you created is the monster that's going to kill you. Karma's a bitch.
Yep, end of story.
Yeah.
Instead, now we got the Secretary of Defense gets away, becomes dependent on the very thing. And now we have the possibility of seeing yet another thing where he comes back.
Well, he obviously, he's going to be coming back.
Because he's not killed off.
Yeah. Which I wonder which will so lead into Resident Evil 5 because of Tricell, because Tricell was part of Resident Evil 5.
And if so, are they going to bring...
A daddy's going to come back.
And if so, are they going to bring in... what's her face?
Shiva?
Shiva. Yeah. Are they going to
bring... Well, that'd bring Chris.
Yeah.
But I guess... Well... Yeah, I guess it would play in if you go under 5. Like I said, as long as they bring back my daddy and do him right, do him justice, I'll be okay with that.
Not a tractor supply.
not a tractor supply knockoff. No,
I'm Albert Wesker. No, yeah, hell
you're
no.
You're not intimidating. Go to the corner, boy.
I work for Ada Wong now. She gave me sunglasses. No.
No.
Oh man.
Ken, once again, you've been quiet. So.
I've been
thoroughly entertained.
I know.
I've been entertained. It's just putting a smile on my face here that we did not go such as in depth with the other episode. This is intriguing here, and we could dissect this all to the ending credits. This little series is fantastic here.
Well, what would your take, Ken, on, you know, as Tessa was saying about Shinmei's brother? Like, okay, so...
Junsi.
Hang on. So another thing we did not touch on, which I actually am trying to figure this out. So maybe Ken or Crystal or Tessa can help me figure this out. So as we all know from the beginning of the first episode, we see the little boy at the very end who is hiding, seeing all this destruction and people getting hung and being ripped apart and being half alive and what I mean by half alive is like as they become zombies, which is very interesting in this aspect because nobody's really bitten. It's almost like there's something in the air that all of a sudden turned all these dead bodies into zombies.
Right. It's sort of like the Walking Dead theory that everyone has the disease.
Exactly.
Like
so,
it's an airborne pathogen or something.
So is that what happened to Shenmei's brother?
Junsi.
Yeah. So was he part of this exposure from the airborneness? Because as far as I can tell, we've never seen him get bitten. And even though he was trapped underneath the helicopter before Jason's team came to rescue him.
And lost part of his legs.
Yep. And, but then we saw the flashback of Jason's team of getting ambushed by all the zombies and just seeing everybody getting bitten. And that's how Jason's squad became infected. And that is why they have to take what I'm calling the antidote every day for the rest of their life, which is eventually why they committed suicide because they just couldn't take it anymore.
And I'm going to point this out too. Junsi, before he died and turned, told Jason after they were all bit, get my pack, inject yourself before you turn. Junsi knew what would happen to them after they got bit.
Which makes the valid point of saying, how did he know what was going on?
Exactly.
Probably he was a spy. We could just use that theory.
Had to have been.
Yeah, because he knew so much about the injections, the bites, everything.
So the story goes much deeper than that. This could go. Netflix could take this as a prequel and a sequel.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah, I would do like the idea of having, what's her name? Shiva from. We haven't seen that character not even in the CGI film, so she should get a spotlight.
We've only seen her since Resident Evil 5.
Yeah, we've only seen her in the game. We haven't seen her CGI, we haven't seen her in nothing. Live action or nothing. So, and she deserves some spotlight because I'd like to see what direction her character would take in a film.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just don't want to see Chris punch another boulder in my life. I'll pass on that.
Yeah, no.
I think we'll all pass on that.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap it up because I honestly do not know how much more we can really dissect into this, but I honestly enjoyed this.
We honestly could dissect it quite a bit, like right down to the credits, like Ken was saying, but we don't want to
overdo it.
We don't want to overkill it.
Yeah. And since this is doing so well and we don't feel like we're really bashing like we did with Welcome to Raccoon City, we didn't dive in as Ken was saying. So
that's because we were more fully and more fully immersed and into this. Immersed,
yeah. So my final thought for Resident Evil Infinite Darkness is Netflix knows what we want. And they took it in a way where this episodic episode stuff is a perfect. As Crystal was saying, bite-sized episodes, it's just perfect. We can just watch one a day, come back, because we can start the next episode, and it had the previously on, basically, to get you caught up or to remember what is going on. Love it. And I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know how much more I can really say, except for they know what they're doing. And I'm enjoying it. And I honestly hope this was just a test from Netflix of the four episodes. Because now I'm going to say I'm keeping my score at 8 out of 10 for this. And I could have bumped it to maybe a 9 if there was maybe one or two more episodes. Because I definitely felt like this Infinite Darkness had a little bit more story in it. A little bit more. Yeah. I would say watch it for sure.
I would definitely agree, and I will always say until otherwise that CGI Resident Evil films are the best route to go. Until somebody can do a live action correctly or do it justice. And I will also stick with my rating of 8 out of 10. And I would honestly like to see what they'll do next in the CGI Resident Evil world, if they will indeed go forward and maybe get into more of like the Resident Evil 5 and see if they'll maybe give Sheba some spotlight, because that would be interesting to see. And I would actually really like to see that. So I would definitely say, yeah, watch this. You'll probably like it better than the live action. We could promise you that. And as Ken was saying before, the distinction between us talking about the live action Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City versus the CGI Resident Evil Infinite Darkness, you can definitely tell that we were more passionate about talking about this versus talking about the live action.
And all I have to say, I have to agree with you, Paul, on this one. It was these episodes, they needed two or three more to really hook the audience in. And if they would not have revealed that final ending and saved that for the sixth episode and elaborate more on the plot, I would say this is a well-rounded series. But all in all, Netflix made a great gamble. It pays off. Hope to see more from this Resident Evil series. But mind you, every other zombie series on Netflix is a hit and a home run. Even a comedy one. I think there was a comedy one with the teenagers. Even that was good. So yeah, all these criticism from big Hollywood production houses. They were criticizing Netflix a few years ago, not giving them awards. But of course, COVID hit, and look at them. Netflix hit home runs with all these in-house productions. I'm looking forward to if and when the next series comes out for this Resident Evil series.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, I mean, my views on Netflix are hit and miss. Cowboy Bebop. They have some shiny moments and they don't have some shiny moments, but this was definitely one of their shiny moments. They really they hit out the park. And I think they kind of played it the same way they did with the Castlevania TV series they're doing. They first made it, like, I think it was like 4 episodes, 2 of the first season of Castlevania. And so they're doing it with this too. And I could see why, testing the water, see how the audience will digest it and if they like it or not. So yeah, I give it, like, I stay with Paul. My review of it's 8. It's a solid 8. It could have been a little longer, but not too much longer. But yeah, all around, it's definitely a good little Resident Evil CGI film, TV show, whatever you want to call it. Check out. I recommend it. And yeah, I would like to see them bring Shiva and Daddy Wesker and all them into this and just continue the story.
All right, well, thank you all for joining this conversation, and I really hope we definitely see a part 2 to this, and I can't wait to see what the hell happens next. And until next time, my name was Paul Dorsky, and I was joined by the lovely
Tessa Baker,
and we had the handsomely
Who's that? Oh, me. Oh, okay. Kent Artus. Hey.
And our girl, the mistress of horror and darkness,
Christelle Lobello.
And we want you to remember to always stay scary.